You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Everyone, welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. As always, this is Nick Wright. We've got a full jam show for you today. We got some controversy surrounding Carson Wentz and the Eagles, Chris Carter.
Yeah.
The Saints, they're still complaining about the no call on Sunday. We're going to kick things off, though, with
man,
the Patriots.
Did you guys have a good night last night?
Okay.
Great.
I don't have time for
the
what'd
night.
You guys have for dinner?
No time.
Jenna ain't got time for you. We're talking sports.
I don't have time for this. All I want to talk about is sports.
I had a Brady shake.
All right. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are preparing for their ninth Super Bowl as a tandem. After Sunday's win, cameras caught a special moment as the two were seen embracing, saying they love each other. Same way Nick and CeCe do to start every morning here. As you'd guess, it was a hot topic yesterday. Here's Tom Brady on his relationship with his longtime coach.
You know, we've always gotten along great. We've worked together for 19 years. So, you know, we've been in the same, had the same goals in mind for 19 years. And, you know, he's been just a great, great mentor in my life, a great coach. He's taught me, you know, more than, you know, anyone ever could about the game of football. You know, I've always just loved playing here and playing for him. He's the greatest coach of all time. And we just had some incredible moments together.
So, you see, we have heard and talked a lot about the relationship between these two, not just this year, but in years past, the discord between them. Has it been overblown? Because here they are again. And obviously, as you just heard from Tom Brady, things are, you know, great.
Well, let's just look over the last 15, 18 years in New England. Any story out of New England? Because of the success that they've had, all of them have been overblown. Like, regardless of what you talk about, even if you go back to Spygate, the amount of coverage, Tom Brady's suspension, all those things, because they're the world champs. They're the most intriguing story that we've had in sports in the last 20 years, and they've dominated the landscape as far as they have created a lot of haters along the way being successful. So, for me, this is more about this was inevitable. This was going to happen. And the reason why is because Bill Belichick and ultimately what he believes in as far as controlling his roster, as far as getting rid of players before they're out of their prime, not signing older players to long-term contracts, and him determining when a player, when their shelf life was going to be ended, him and Tom Brady, based on what Tom, this how Tom has tried to restructure his whole eating and restructure his whole career based on eating, they were on a crash course. Because Tom Brady has been saying for a long time, I want to play till I'm 45. Well, Bill Belichick, ultimately, that was going to meet, regardless, if we weren't talking about anything else, just forget about relationships, how tough they are, being in a pressure environment that they have been in, all the things. Yes, that's a normal amount of stress on any relationship. But you know, Brumley brought it to my attention. Man, let's look at some of the greatest relationships ever. They break up.
Right. There's. Well, go ahead. If you.
No. Go ahead. That's it.
No. I mean, that's what bands. You know what I mean? Be it the television shows. Like there are a lot of long-running television shows, but like the person sitting with Regis changes or there. And so it's hard for things to last. Marriages. And I don't think it was overblown. I think what happened last year and what was reported last year was real. There was a power struggle, and Brady won it. And you know what? I think they're both better off for it. I think Belichick was looking for the same timeline I'd been looking at in NFL history, which was no one had done what Brady did at 39. So is he going to do it at 40 and at 41? He says he wants to play till he's 45. I've got this young quarterback who I think can do it. I know at the time being would be doing it cheaper. And then the inflection point of the relationship where the, even if Brady already had seized some of the power, was the comeback in the Falcons Super Bowl. From that moment forward, Tom Brady, if he wasn't already a made man in NFL lore, he became as made of a man as you can within the only people who have real power over Belichick's life, the Krafts. And because of that, we saw what we saw last year, which was almost seemingly rushed at the trade deadline. Jimmy Garoppolo traded. I do think there was real discord, but discord doesn't mean dysfunction. And discord doesn't mean
it
that
can. It just didn't.
Absolutely right. And it all worked out.
Right.
I know they didn't win the Super Bowl last year, but that wasn't on number 12. What did he throw, 500 yards? He was great. And then this year, when things seem to be on the team level deteriorating from a performance standpoint, come the playoffs, they dominate the Chargers. Belichick has a brilliant game plan for the Chiefs. And then in the final moments, guess what? Brady was perfect. And so to me, that embrace at the midfield was, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but when I'm looking at it, it was a realization from both of them. Man, we don't get to 9 by ourselves. We might not get to 5 by ourselves. We might not get to 3 by ourselves, because that Chiefs game was the perfect melding of the two. Belichick took care of the beginning. Brady took care of the end. And with the two of them, they are so much greater as a combo than what they would be individually.
The reason why I believe it's overblown is because I know Mr. Kraft. I know enough about Belichick in knowing players that have played for him, played against him, no other coaches that have coached with him, no people that have played with Tom Brady. And there's not a lot of information on these relationships. So for me, a lot of this stuff is guessing. A lot of the stuff, it is gossip, because there's not a lot of information out of that relationship. So I believe a lot of the media attention, people add things to what happened. Ultimately, they had to make a decision on Jimmy Garoppolo. Right. If he was going to stay, if he was going to go. Now, Belichick might have wanted something else, but Tom Brady's ability to play at 40, that changed the game. Playing at an MVP level at 40, regardless of what Belichick believed in, all right, it became evident Tom Brady wanted to finish his playing career with the New England Patriots. So for me, I don't think there was as much tension there as people would try to make us try to believe there was tension there, compared to there's automatically going to be tension in a work relationship, especially when you can't control your exit. And that's the way it is with Tom Brady in New England.
What people like to do so often is pull them apart. Well, does one need the other? Who's more important? Who won that game? Who's responsible more for the titles? Who's responsible more for the success? But it appears to be that them together are responsible for the success, that they wouldn't be able to survive, if you will, separate from each other. Why are we even asking that question? I mean, can you think of another relationship in sports that has, we just talked about in Green Bay
with McCarthy
and Rodgers, one or two seasons of him being a little upset and they had to separate the two. I'm sure that it has gone over the years where there are times where Tom Brady's frustrated, but I can't imagine the two of them not being together and not being responsible for
success. It's a sports unknown, and we'll never know it. Like, what would Belichick's career have been like with a different quarterback, and what Brady's career would have been like with a different coach? I do think there are paths to go down where, for both of them, it doesn't end anywhere near greatest of all time discussion. But what we know is what we know, which is together they have accomplished unprecedented, and it's not just unprecedented. It would have been seemingly, if I would have told you, Chris, or when you were retiring, would you retired the year after they won their first Super Bowl, that, hey, these guys are going to go to 8 more of these things together. They're going to win 4 more, maybe 5 more. I don't think you would have believed it was possible. I don't think anyone thought that it was.
No, I would have put that in the bag of Nick Wright's hot takes.
Right. I mean, it
this is not going to happen.
It is more, when people say, when LeBron went to the Heat and he was like, not 6, not 7. That seemed outlandish, but it didn't seem impossible. When people talk about the Warriors, if they stay together, could they win 4 in a row, 5 in a row? It seems outlandish, but not impossible. What the Patriots have done, seems impossible. The only reason it's believable is because we saw it happen, and it obviously and clearly doesn't happen without these two guys coming together at the exact moment they did and the way they did.
Belichick can't coach the way he wants to coach unless he has a quarterback like Tom Brady. So for me, Belichick will always be more important. His impact on the 53-man roster, how that roster is put together, how the front office is going to do, how the Crafts are going to run their football business, that's all Belichick. Josh McDaniels comes down, gives Brady 8 plays the morning of the AFC Championship, what happens to be the most important game of Tom Brady's career. That was not Tom Brady. Tom Brady just showed up. But what they have put in place to allow him to be better, to me, that's why Belichick is far more important than Tom Brady. And I believe that Tom Brady understands that more than the public. That's why I believe that the public makes too much of the relationship as if there's tension there. I believe Tom Brady understands it more than we do.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, why are players calling Carson Wentz selfish? Talk some Eagles next on First Things First.
There's something about auctions that makes shopping so much more fun. For sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your own home. Pristine Auction runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of all of their items, and everything you purchase comes from only the most trusted sources. And the best part? It's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Ricky Stenhouse Jr. photo that sold for only $6. Go check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and you only pay for the items you win. That's pristineauction.com. And when you register, be sure to select First Things First Podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Let them know we sent you. Make sure you select First Things First Podcast from the drop-down menu when you go to pristineauction.com.
All right, we'll get to Carson Wentz and the Eagles in just a second, but first, couple of big plays you might have missed last night. Oh, Giannis driving to the basket and then does that to Luka Doncic.
Man, watching Giannis on a night-to-night basis is such a joy.
He's the most dangerous player in the open court. You never think he's going to finish like this, but, man, some type of way he can dunk on you.
Sixers,
all
Rockets,
different types of angles.
James Harden leading the break. Joel Embiid hustles back, throws Harden's layup off the backboard. Sixers with a big win last night.
Dominating win over Houston despite James Harden heroics. This is something Houston might have to get used to in this time with no Capella, still no Paul. Harden's great, and they get whooped.
Oh, yeah, they were going at it last night. This was a fun game to watch. Houston didn't play well, but they got under Harden's skin.
Man, Embiid's going to have a lot of enemies in this league. Oh, no.
Bulls-Cavs, Chris Dunn throws a perfect alley-oop to Zach LaVine.
I don't know about the city of Chicago, but for a national show, we have the Bulls, a sorry team, on our highlight reel on a regular basis. I don't know why. It's not as if we have some connection there.
They got some high flyers on the team. Here's the thing for the Cavs. We have now passed MLK Day, which is a big day on the NBA calendar. They are still in single-digit wins. Still Cleveland. If the NBA, if they end up with Zion.
I don't think we had the highlights on there so you can flame Cleveland.
Well, it's just what came to mind. You flame the Bulls and our production staff for one there. Oh, no.
Finally, worst you'll ever see out of Steph Curry. Going for the dunk. That's not good. Then Iggy gets him the ball back and air ball. That's not good either.
So, listen, good thing he didn't get hurt. Since he didn't get hurt, we can laugh about it. Steph and Clay have...
No, if he had gotten hurt, I would still be laughing.
Okay. All right, fine. Steph and Clay have an ongoing competition about dunks in the season. Clay's at 11. Steph is at 1. So Steph was trying to get to 2 there. He said after the game he had something special cooked up. Instead, he falls down.
Yeah, that's what happens if you buy basketball shoes at the grocery store. Those Under Armours, to me, they still have a long way to go as far as technology before they get on my feet.
All right, moving on to Carson Wentz. So a report came out yesterday calling Philly's franchise quarterback, quote, selfish and egotistical, and went on to say, quote, Carson Wentz's biggest enemy is Carson Wentz. This from anonymous players interviewed on the Eagles. Well, let's just say this made some non-anonymous players on the Eagles upset. Lane Johnson came to his quarterback's defense, tweeting, "Whoever wrote that article needs to check their sources. Hashtag fake news. Carson has been and is our leader and our quarterback. Y'all know where to find me if you have any issues. Hashtag fly Eagles fly." And Fletcher Cox chimed in, "Reading through this Carson Wentz thing, and as a leader on this team, none of that's true. Carson's a great teammate and great player, and we're all behind him 100%. He's our guy, and we'll come back and prove the world wrong. If you got a problem, feel free to at me. I will respond." All right, Nick, what do you make of all this?
All right, so I don't believe the author made this up. Just said I talked to six Eagles players, and he didn't. I do think these are people on the team, people close to the team, saying these things. Now, what should we take these things to mean? I think it also should be noted, Josina Anderson, who is as reputable a reporter as there is, a couple months ago reported some of the same frustrations with Carson Wentz before Nick Foles got his second act with the team, about it being a Zach Ertz-centric offense, about him not going through the progressions as far as looking at who's open, instead looking to either run the ball on the RPOs himself or to Zach Ertz rather than just go with the flow of the offense. So we've had multiple reports now with some Eagles being frustrated. This doesn't surprise me in the least. Like, if you are a pass catcher on the Eagles, not named Zach Ertz, of course you're frustrated. Zach Ertz is a good player, but he's not good enough to be the most targeted tight end in NFL history. And it should be noted, the guy whose record he broke for catches by a tight end in NFL history, we heard some of this with Witten and Romo. If you remember that relationship where there were receivers on the Cowboys, maybe a little jealous is one way to put it, about that relationship and whether or not he was favored as far as pass catching. C talks all the time. Receivers care about two things above all else: their money and their stats. And the stats help you get the money. And so do I believe that there could be players on the Eagles that, A, think the team plays better with Nick Foles? Absolutely. I think there are a lot of people, even if they can't explain it, that think the team plays better with Nick Foles. And B, are frustrated that they run one offense that they won and won a Super Bowl, another, the same offense they won, they ran at the end of the year, and seemingly a different Zach Ertz-centric offense while Carson Wentz is out there. I buy all of that. Now, the selfish, egotistical part, I've never heard that before. And so, and it seems like there are a lot of teammates publicly saying that isn't who he is. So maybe there's certain guys that don't like Carson Wentz as a guy, but that doesn't seem to be the knock on him. But the football knock, I think, is fair and real, and I believe it.
Well, from a football standpoint, you have a number of quotes in there, and I think it's important that the audience knows that when you have people like Fletcher Cox, when you have people like Lane Johnson, those are interior. Those are kind of the heart and soul. The reason why they were good last year was because their big people were better. Their offense and defensive line, even though they had the injuries. But as far as understanding football, those guys understand the least amount of football that's on the field. Lane Johnson, he doesn't know who's supposed to get the ball. When they tell him a pass protection, they tell him the pass protection and they tell him the snap count. The rest of it, he's not listening to. If I go, let's go double right, scat right, 585 X dig. All he cares about is the number that tells him the protection, and that's the 585 to tell him the quarterback's going to be going five steps back. So who's supposed to get the ball and everything? He don't know. Fletcher Cox is a defensive tackle. He has no clue of what the offense is doing. Now, they've been utilizing their running backs by committee. So you know it's not one of the running backs because none of them have a big enough role to be able to say something like this. To me, I do believe that there are wide receivers on the team that have said comments that this reporter has also added his own personal opinion on it, that he could be able to write stories or things could be released like this. But if you think throughout my career there weren't other wide receivers jealous, or you weren't, there weren't other wide receivers that said, man, if I could be targeted 14 times like Chris, I would be different. My career would be different. I would be a lot better. So for me, in something like this, I've been following it long enough to think one of the wide receivers did give him some comments. And it's hard for people. It's hard to impossible. When someone shows up on the job and your performance goes up, for them not to think that that between the correlation between their performance and that person not being better, that's all they can interpret. And there's no NFL offenses that are the same when you put the backup in compared, because no one sees football the same. I don't care. If Drew Brees was the backup for New England and they had the same game plan, the ball would not come out to the same people because it's impossible for two people to see football the same way. Every coach at the end of the week, you know what he asked the starting quarterback? How comfortable are you with this? What else do you like? What do you feel? Because guys like, they feel more comfortable throwing to certain parts of the field. Yes, and there's guys that feel more comfortable throwing to certain receivers.
Yep.
Just to protect the quarterbacks a little bit from the Philly thing, and then I'm going to stop. There ain't a whole bunch of separation. So when you talk about throwing the ball to Zach Ertz, he's their best wide receiver. He gets the most separation. He wins more than the other receivers. Alshon is no separation. He's a 50-50 guy. All right, Nelson Aguilar is inconsistent his first several years in the league. Who else do you have there? So when the receivers are complaining, I would just like, be careful, because there's not a whole bunch of separation I see the wide receivers getting.
Is it a legitimate knock on a quarterback to not go through his progressions for him to feel a certain level of comfort with one specific receiver?
It's a legitimate knock if the offense is not reaching its full potential. It's a legitimate knock if you could be being more effective. And that's DeCee's point, which is when they got in real time, we usually don't get this in sports, the real time experiment, which is let's change one variable, the variable being quarterback. Oh, all of a sudden, look, the offense is wide open. The offense opens up. The other part,
I wouldn't say as far as one offense is wide open when Carson Wentz is not in there to Nick Foles.
I don't think that was the case in the 2017 season. In the 2018 season, to my eyes, the offense did seem to open up greatly in the final month of the season once Nick Foles went in there. Now, we can talk about the other things that weren't as one-to-one as far as quarterback change. Offensive line got better. Guys got healthier. Things, what, more desperation. They really could wear the underdog roles, whatever it is. But I understand why guys would think that what changed was the quarterback. Now I'm getting my numbers. Now I'm getting my targets. The other part of this that I thought was interesting was that you had DeFilippo leave, you had the offensive coordinator leave, and Frank Reich leave, and all of a sudden they said, now Carson Wentz can run over the room. That he had the ability, according to this report, to, with their new offensive coordinator, grow to kind of impose his will more so than he had last year. And that could be a problem for any young quarterback, for anyone that hasn't seen as much football as Frank Reich in his 30-plus years, John DeFilippo in his 20-plus years, and whether or not that hurt their offense somewhat. The silver lining for the Eagles is, see, they've been looking for, with Wentz, a reason to say, man, people are doubting us. And now all of a sudden, if they want to be able to rally on, man, guys think you're a bad guy. Guys think that we're better with Nick Foles, who's going to be on a different team next year.
Right.
Maybe that can be their rallying point for next season.
I just believe in Carson Wentz. I believe he is the answer. I know each quarterback has their personality, but from everything that I have felt coming out of Philadelphia, the players I talked to, that they would really, really there's no way that they believe this story. And I can understand people thinking, old Nick Foles, a better quarterback. But there's no way that I'm going forward as Nick Foles as my quarterback. I'm putting Carson Wentz in there, and regardless of any rumors, regardless of those other receivers and what they're saying. Because you can believe there's a disgruntled wide receiver on every team.
Sure.
If you put a microphone in every receivers around the NFL, the backups, they would be telling you, and we'd be getting stories a lot like this.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is the NFL about to make major changes following the no call in New Orleans? CeCe says nope.
Nope.
That is next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth joins the show.
Fresh from his week in Los Angeles.
How are
we? Good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
We are great.
Good.
We always missed you. We're glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back.
Got a lot to talk to you about.
I didn't miss you, but glad,
yeah,
glad
well,
you're
yeah,
back
because you and I were texting.
Yeah. I was with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Two days later, we're still talking about the no call in the Saints-Rams game, the one that inevitably sent the Saints packing and sent the Rams to the Super Bowl. The referees admitted to missing a late pass interference on Nickell Robey-Coleman. Too little, too late, say Saints fans. And as for the players themselves, well, the NFL admission of fault doesn't do much.
It's devastating to us. I mean, you can admit apologize with it where home, you know, that we get that call. I feel like we got a really good chance to be playing in 2 weeks against the Patriots. So it's too late. It doesn't mean nothing to us to admit it or don't admit it. It's too late.
And, of course, Stink, this is going to now open up Pandora's box for what should and should not be included in instant replay. What do you think about the NFL expanding instant replay to pass interference plays?
Well, I mean, I think that's fine. I just hate instant replay. I hate the way they implement it. I hate the fact that they don't change enough calls. I hate the fact that like, the whole mantra is with instant replay is we want to get the game right. Right? Is that correct? But only if you have a challenge flag. Only if your coach reaches down and grabs it out of his sock and throws the challenge flag, or if you have enough timeouts, or if we only want to get it right when we want to get it right, or when you have a challenge flag. Like, that makes no sense to me. Like, wouldn't you want to get it right, I don't know, all the time? Wouldn't that be the goal? So why do we have to go through the histrionics of the challenge flag? Why do we have to have a ref walk to the sideline to look at the Microsoft tablet when they're making the decision in New York? Why do we have to do all that? Just put a lower third down that says, this challenge brought to you by Microsoft. If you're buying it, why do we have to go through all the garbage? Let's have somebody upstairs that looks at every play and goes, oh, yeah, wait a minute. Give me a second. Let me relook at that. Stops the game or whatever. I don't understand why the whole challenge play. Is it for the drama of it? Because I don't care about the drama. I want to get it right.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to recommend something like that when you're in the playoffs and you only have a game or two. But I would doubt that the NFL has the capability of having 8 qualified people in real time. Say, when you're calling games, and sometimes you're in that first window of games, there's 8 games on.
Yeah.
So I need 8 specific people that are going to running the game from New York. I don't think they have the ability to be able to do that.
And now, if we're talking about expanding it to penalties or things that weren't called penalty, you can't just watch the ball. You got to watch the opposite side of the field. Was there illegal contact? Did one of the guys in the trenches hold? Listen, I think this is a terrible idea. Just period, point blank. And people can point to the CFL. Oh, the CFL did it. And they expanded replay in the final 3 minutes and on pass interference calls. Okay, people used to say that. You know what happened in 2015, right, in the CFL championship game, the Grey Cup, was the game was, I don't necessarily want to say flipped, but on the game-winning touchdown drive of their version of the Super Bowl, coach challenged a non-call pass interference, went his way. We want that. Because it's usually not this blatant. It's usually hand fighting. Mm. It usually could go either way. And I'm watching Chiefs Patriots, and I've been told the whole time there was replay, it's incontrovertible video evidence. And they are looking if Julian Edelman touched that punt. And it's like, in this angle, looked like it touched his thumbs. In this angle, it didn't. And nobody knows if that's getting overturned or not. There's not consistency with it. The reason that play ended up not being a controversial one was 2 plays later, Brady threw a pick, so it felt like it evened out for the Chiefs anyway. But I do not trust the mechanism, and at its core, I don't think these NFL games are just about getting it right. There's a reason that NFL guys make the money they do when they're on television, and the International Lawn Dart Association isn't. People enjoy watching the games. And if these games turn into 4.5-hour review fests because every call must be got right every time, then you are dampening the entertainment quality of what is the entertainment industry. So I wish we could remove all replay. We're not going to do that. Expanding it to non-called penalties is so dangerous to what it would do on any big play of the game.
But even if you coaches still had 3 challenges, Poor, and that's one of your 3 challenges, and if you get it wrong, you get it wrong, I mean, that doesn't take away from the time of the game.
No, we can't forget the entertainment value. The NFL right now, they have it right. And they've been working on it the last several years to get it within that 3 hours, 3 hour and 10 minute time. And it's going to take, if you give them more challenges, it's going to take more time. So I don't believe it can work. Now, I'm just going to tell you, based on being on a couple committees that changed the rule with the catch, no catch, and first they didn't want to change it, then they changed it. Like, I see another committee coming in my future, and I'm open. I'm not totally against. I just haven't seen the right way to build it, institute it in the games where it's not going to stop the flow of the game. And one thing we need to do, too, we need to consider this. Before we change any more rules, how much more difficult are we going to make it for the defensive players?
Yeah.
Well, anybody thinking about that? No, of course not.
Right.
Now, no, because it's already impossible to play defense. We got the numbers going. The numbers tell you that as far as points. We saw that September, October. Man, the only thing that helped us out
was the weather.
Was the weather a little bit. So how many more rules are we going to change that we make this game more lopsided than what it is?
I will tell you the other thing, and you're 100% right on that. The other thing is, how many more rules are we going to change to make it more difficult on the refs? Like, their job is incredibly difficult. This is one of the reasons I was always – now, I'm not a replay fan. I was always one of those guys that's on the fringe saying, scrap the whole thing, because you can't get it right anyhow. So scrap it, and let's just let human error. Because I look at the Saints situation and said, you run the ball twice there, you make them eat up their timeouts, then you run it the third time, then you kick a field goal. Guess what? They have almost –
less than a minute, less and they're down three with having to drive at least 60 yards.
So, yeah. You know,
Patty Mahomes did that in the evening, so it's not like it's not possible. Exactly.
He had one timeout. But
also, if you catch them in an all-out blitz, which they were in, and you throw the ball and you score a touchdown.
Right.
This is where you and I disagree. But I don't want to score a touchdown with a minute 40 left.
That's okay. You want to risk risk. Right. But when you're on the field, players always say, man, we want the coach to be aggressive. We want the coach to be aggressive. When you see the type of numbers, and it lets you know that if Drew Brees can throw me a 5-yard stop and I could potentially end this game, I want that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take the chance to give them the ball and a field goal is going to tie me up. That's not that difficult to do in the NFL.
Well, going back to the refs, though, we asked them to do so many things. And one of the things that instant replay has done to the refs, it's taken away part of the whole situation that they're in is, hey, you know what? Swallow your whistle. Let's let replay decide. Right. And so the guys get less – they're less demonstrative than they used to be.
Yes.
They're less in charge than they used to be.
They know something's not a fumble, and they know the quarterback's arms are going through. They're like, let's not whistle it dead.
Right.
They're getting obvious things wrong. And the other thing that this would do is refs set the tone. Obviously, this is not a good example of it because this was a terrible missed call. But refs set the tone early. We calling it tight or we calling it loose?
Right.
Are we going to call it by the letter or are we going to let you play a little bit?
Right.
And if you then all of a sudden can challenge one play a game, to your point, Jenna, how long would it delay it? Even if it doesn't make the game longer. One of the worst things about, in my opinion, the catch rule the way it used to be was any big catch, if your team made it, you're sitting on pins and needles while they're showing these replays. You're like, oh, God, don't let them show that the ball moved. Don't let them show this little bit because you want it to get to the next play. If you could challenge non-calls, any big touchdown your team scores, you're just terrified. Don't let them throw a challenge flag because there was holding on the guard. Don't let them throw a challenge flag because there might have been a pick play, a yard pass where it can be. And you can't. One of the nice things about baseball is a home run's a home run. Like, there's clarity on it. We know when a guy hits a home run, it's not getting challenged. It's not coming back. And so that's where I agree with you entirely. It's made the referees less certain of what they're seeing with their eyes because they have the crutch of the replay.
Mark, stick around.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk more football on the other side. Coming up, was the discord between Brady and Belichick overstated? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth, we're going viral. Antonio Brown spent Championship Sunday shirtless, working on his craft, catching passes. No, he's wearing a shirt. Is he not wearing a shirt?
He's wearing a shirt. Kyler Murray's not wearing a shirt,
and that's who's throwing the ball. From Heisman winner Kyler Murray. AB also tweeted his appreciation for Steeler Nation, saying this is not a goodbye, just a thank you.
See, this you took note of this during the games, talking about whatever criticisms people have of Antonio Brown, how hard he's going to work is not one of them.
No.
What's up, C?
I mean, no, that's not one of the question marks. No, not how hard he wants to work. But as you can see, there's only a quarterback, a DB, and a whole bunch of teammates and everything around him. That's when the questions become, man, that's your fault. Man, forget you. Why are you talking to me? Yeah, he's a wide receiver. It's nice. Look at me. I mean, he put the video out there. Look at me.
Maybe he was trying to show off Kyler, pinpoint accuracy, trying to help his draft stuff.
He should have taken a picture of him and Kyler standing next to each other. Been like, wow, they look like two wide receivers.
Right, about the same height.
Yeah.
Couple slot receivers.
All right, back here with Mark Schlereth. Time for some stories to start your morning. Klay Thompson went off last night, tied an NBA record by making 10 straight threes. He finished with 44 points as the Warriors rolled the Lakers. Remember that slump Klay was in? Nick, how impressive was Klay Thompson last night?
Well, I mean, we've never seen this before. He ties the record for 10 straight threes, but nobody had ever done his first 10 threes of the game. Made 10 in a row, missed one, and was like, I'll be done shooting for the night, 10 of 11. Nice 44 points in 26 minutes. Just a vintage Klay Thompson performance.
The hard part is the Lakers know he was going to shoot it. Nothing they can do about it. I mean, even when they overplayed the three-pointer, overplayed his right hand, he still was getting it up. Man, that was a classic Klay night last night.
To the NFL now, Drew Brees says he'll be back next season. It'll be his 19th season in the NFL and his 14th with the Saints. Stink, you think Drew Brees has one more playoff run left in him?
Oh, absolutely. He's playing. I mean, come on. He completed almost 75% of his balls this year. I mean, he's an incredible player. He's an incredible leader. He's a great, I mean, just a great human being. So, yeah, absolutely. And he's playing at as high a level as he's ever played at. Your new prime starts for quarterbacks now around 36. You know, right? I mean, it's unbelievable what he and some of these older quarterbacks are doing in the league.
And back-to-back, heartbreaking playoff exits for Drew Brees and the Saints somehow got worse this year than last year.
And he's in great shape. He just doesn't tell you about it. On to the Rams now. Despite him not making a big impact in the NFC Championship game, Sean McVay says Todd Gurley is healthy ahead of the Super Bowl. Stink, you think Gurley bounces back in the Super Bowl?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a phenomenal player. I don't think there's any question that he's been nursing some type of injury. I know he had a knee problem earlier in the year. There's no question that he wasn't himself. In the NFC Championship games, does he bounce back? Absolutely, he bounces back.
Yeah, there's no way C.J. Anderson is going to lead the Rams against the New England Patriots. Now, he might run the ball against some other NFL teams, but he will not be able to run the ball against New England. Todd Gurley's ability to be special in the passing game and in the running game, that's what made the Rams special the last 2 years. If he's not special, I don't see the Rams winning.
All right, back to the Patriots and their incredible run now. How do you define an incredible run? Well, they're heading to their third straight Super Bowl and their fourth in 5 years. In sports terms, that's good. A lot of that has to do with their edge preparing for the game. Tom Brady said they added 8 plays the morning of the AFC title game, and they used 4 or 5 of them in the game, all successful, according to Tom. Stink, how impressive was the Patriots' approach against the Chiefs team?
Well, I think a couple of things that, you know, you just look at the small things, the little things that they do. Just from clock management standpoint, one of the things you want to do as a football team is you want to eliminate Kansas City's possessions because offensively they're so good. You watch them. They huddle every time. They come out in a league where it's completely spread offense. They come out with a tight end, fullback, running back, two tights, two running backs, with one being a fullback and one wide receiver.
I thought it was 80s, 90s.
Right.
Parcells.
Right. That's exactly what it looked like. And then they huddled every time. They didn't snap the ball until there was less than 10 seconds
on the
clock.
They don't work on the last 4 minutes of the quarter to start working on the clock. If that's your objective when you start the game, well, let's start right now.
Right. First drive of the game, they eat up on close to 8 minutes. I think Kansas City had 3 drives in the first half. They got the ball in the fourth their fourth opportunity and got sacked with about 20 seconds
left. Right, 3 real drives.
3 drives in the first half. I mean, that's winning football. Then pass rushing. Like, you think of little things about how they operated their pass rush, where they ran, like, nose guard
stunts.
Out. Yes, stunts the whole time. Nose guard out, tackle out, loop the end into the middle, force Mahomes out to the edge where they have a guy waiting for him because of the stunt they just ran. So little things like that that they do on a consistent basis, they do it better than anybody else. They have the game plan. They go, this is how we're going to execute it. Here's why. They do a great job. I think both of these teams, both the Rams and the Patriots, and I've called 3 Rams games, the Rams, every play has a reason. And every player understands the reason. This is why we run this. This is the reason we run it this way. This is what it sets up in play action. This is what, I mean, they go through it, and every guy knows it, and New England executes it that way probably better than anybody else.
And what was, to me, so impressive, to elaborate on your point about clock management and game planning, is the Patriots' consistent ability within a game to be fluid. So the Patriots' plan the whole first half was minimize possessions. It was very clear. Mm-hmm. And they dominated that first half. But thanks to that Brady pick in the end zone, they're only up 7-0. And they get the ball with around 2 minutes left in the first half, and they are clearly content going to halftime up 7-0. They run the ball, let 40 seconds run off a play clock. They run it again on second down. They get stopped. Andy Reid, I'm not criticizing him. I would have done it in that spot, too. I think every coach would. Says, we got him in third and long. We can get the ball back. He calls timeout. The moment he calls timeout, Belichick realizes, all right, now the situation's changed a little bit. We can afford to be a little aggressive. And then all of a sudden flips. For the first time all half, we're going to try to go downfield on you. They steal a touchdown out of it. Philip Dorsett. The second half, they go back to the clock management game plan. Then the Chiefs take the lead. And then it becomes a Tom Brady passing-centric offense. Their ability within a game to change their style to exactly what the situation demands, as opposed to the old cliche of, oh, we're going to establish the run, we're going to be a tough-nosed football team, or we're going to spread them out. Okay, that all makes sense if the situation demands it. The Patriots do whatever individual situations demand, recognizing that could be three or four different things within one football game, as was the case Sunday night.
This is why all season I would ask you, why are they so good even though talent-wise they don't match up with their opponents so well? It's because you keep saying they play such good situational football. They're so prepared. They know exactly what's going to be, what's going to happen, and it starts with Tom Brady at the line being able to read those defenses.
Well, they don't know what's going to happen. They play the percentages as far as probability. What people don't understand is when you look at New England, they're very, very predictable. In this game, they ran the ball 48 times. The Chiefs only have 47 plays. So when you start the game, that was their game plan. Mm-hmm. Now, they wanted to do it a couple different ways. Sony Michel was dominant for three quarters. But we're going to allow Rex Burkhead to be able to knock you out late in the game. So their variance within what they're trying to do, James White, we knew coming into Kansas City, was one of the worst defending running backs coming out of the backfield. He only played 12 plays in the first half. He gets six first downs. Mm-hmm. Two times he picks up a blitz. That Philip Dorsett, when they got aggressive, James White picks up a blitz. So utilizing the players, knowing what their strengths are, and having them do the things that they're strong at, that's what is the secret to New England and how they design these game plans. There's no accident the reason why they don't typically have more college graduates on their team. You know the reason why? Because there's going to be some Sunday mornings that I'm going to wake up as a coach and I'm going to try to install some things. Now, there wasn't a team I have ever been on that they could come in the offensive meeting room the morning of the game and put in eight plays and there wouldn't be some type of chaos or confusion, especially in the wide receivers room and or it would be a trickle-down effect, the running backs and the offensive line. Like, so that variance that they have over every other team, oh, man, that's part of the secret sauce that, no, we're going to have a game plan, but we're not stuck to it because we might vary it by one way or another.
I think it's really interesting, and I think this is a societal thing in general, that we like to pick people apart. We like to look at people's weaknesses because it makes us feel better about our own weaknesses, to point the finger at somebody else's weaknesses.
Right, that's immediately what we start to do stink. After college football, we love the pomp and pageantry of college football. Right. All these kids playing for their school, but as soon as they say they're going pro, we immediately say, Kyler Murray. Oh, he's not 5'11".
Right.
You know, then we start poking. Yes.
So the New England Patriots, and I've talked to multiple people within in the scouting community, people that have worked for them, and the whole aspect that sets them apart is, I don't want to know what he can't do. Tell me what he can do. And let's see if we can put them in a position to win. And I think ultimately you can look at any walk of life or any business and say, if you had that as your standard, if you had that as your foundation of don't tell me what this guy can't do. Let me put him in a position to win. Let me put her in a position to win, as opposed to focusing on her or his weaknesses. And that's what they do. Why do you think they use three different backs? Well, this guy's really good.
Something
right,
well.
This guy's really
they get a complete back by using
right,
three of them.
Right, this guy's really good at this, and this guy is really good at this, and we're going to put him in these situations to be successful. We're not going to ask, you know, we're not asking Rex Burkhead to do something that's James White's strength. Let's put right. James White in there.
And it's
do that.
Why I constantly underrate this team. Because I look at I look at the teams, I'm like, man, they don't got no one like Todd Gurley that can do everything, right?
Right.
But James White is the pass catcher, at least not maybe not
he's
down the field, but horizontally. Right?
Right.
But James White has an element of his game that he can do as well as Gurley can. They don't have the number one, and I'm sure they'd like to have one, but the number one wide receiver. But they have a guy in Edelman that they know exactly what he can do, and they will only ask him to do that. Philip Dorsett might only be able to run one route effectively. He scored a touchdown on it on the AFC Championship game, running that nine route. So, like, their ability to simply say, okay, you might Cordarrelle Patterson. You might have been disappointing as a first-round draft pick in Minnesota. But there were elements that made you a first-round draft pick that instead of trying to grow your game to the things you're weak at, we are just going to try to put a spotlight on those things, those skills
right.
you already
we're
have.
We're going to maximize the skills you have. And I found it laughable when people said, well, Gronkowski, he's dropped. I mean, he only had one catch. And I'm like, did you watch him on line of scrimmage? Did you watch him dispense justice on defensive ends and linebackers? Did you watch him run across the formation, wham, block a nose, and then run the wham pass where he whams the nose and Edelman runs the over and he's open by 20, you know, gets a 31-yard gain. He's open by 7 yards. I go, did you watch? He had an incredible effect on the game in the divisional round and caught one ball and may have been the biggest difference maker on the offensive side of the ball in that game. But we just want to look at, yeah, but he only had one catch. Yeah, but you know what? He did everything else that gave them that victory in that particular game against the Chargers.
The other element to this team's success is the relationship between their quarterback and their coach, which is an unprecedented relationship. We haven't seen it anywhere else really in sports. It's longevity and then how close they are. How successful is Brady Belichick, that tandem, to the success of this Patriots team?
Well, I think it's huge, and I think I fought with my offensive line coach about things all the time during the course of my career. Like, that's stupid. I'm not going to do it. And, you know, and then he would yell at me and I'd yell at him and we'd figure it out eventually. But there's certain things, you know, as a receiver, if some coach tells you to do something, you're like, hey, man, on a grease board, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. In a game, that don't work. And as long as you can give them the reason it doesn't work, I think most guys are great with that. I called my offensive line coach just the other day. Just tell him I loved him. Best coach I ever played for. Man, I just want to tell you I love you.
Yeah,
it just dawned on me.
You're such a good guy.
No, but it just dawned on me. I was like, man, I haven't talked to him in a long time. I haven't talked to him in a while. I'm just going to call him, tell him I love him.
And I think
it was awkward when he called me back, though, because he was like, oh, hey, thanks for the message.
On voicemail?
Yeah, I left it on voicemail. Like, thanks for the message. Yeah, I like you, too.
But I think that now, as an older person, you appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I think that Tom Brady wasn't a star in college. He was not the high draft pick. He was not the choice for the franchise. So in his greatness being developed, a lot of that had to do with Brady submitting his talent, believing in Belichick. Mm-hmm. Because Brady comes to the game with hellacious confidence that they're going to have a defensive scheme. Now, they might not have all the people to rush the passer, the linebackers that you know about. But in the red zone, they're going to be able to slow people down, and they're able to create turnovers for Brady. So I just believe how his talent has developed. He has tremendous faith in who Belichick is, and he has appreciation now, not when he's retired like Stink. And I think that that's part of the magic that makes that relationship go.
Well, and the other element is, and we talk about this team and this relationship more than any other in the NFL because they win the most, and so they're usually one of the last two teams. They're always one of the last four teams. So there's more airtime to discuss them. But any long-term success that I can think of in sports has some type of bond between the star player and the coach. Like, there's one-off championships. Like, those happen where it was, I don't know how good the coach was, or I don't know if they had the star player. But whether it's the Spurs in the NBA or the Bulls in the NBA or the Lakers in the NBA, a league that has a bunch of dynasties, or the Patriots in the NFL, really the only dynasty, there's the symbiosis. Like, there is, Jordan needed to run the triangle and needed to submit something to Phil Jackson, right? Just like Kobe and Shaq did. Duncan needed Popovich to have that type of run. Brady, the reason that we can say, oh, Aaron Rodgers, most talented quarterback we've ever seen, he's been to one Super Bowl. He's never had that symbiosis to work with where when he's not at his best, they can still win. And when he is at his best, they are unbeatable. That's what the Pats and Brady have had along with Belichick.
I need you so that I can move forward with
you need
Brum
words. And all the 11 people who work for you, Jenna.
That is
those are the people you need.
Not true. Stink, stick around. Yes. Got more to talk about. Coming up, should we expect an offensive explosion in the Super Bowl? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth. So it'll be 17 years to the day since these two same teams, the Rams and the Patriots, met in Super Bowl 36. The game has changed quite a bit in that span, especially this past season, especially on offense. Patriots and Rams were two of the highest scoring teams in the NFL this year. And so Vegas is adjusting accordingly. The over-under is 58 for this game, the highest in Super Bowl history. Stink, what type of game should we expect?
You know, it's going to be interesting because my first experience of getting to know Eric Mangini, who is on the show all the time, was at our former workplace where he cornered me in the hall and we talked for about an hour plus on defending the zone running game. And he
such
was
an
like,
conversation.
Yes.
Well, so Stink's people should know,
right.
People that don't know.
Okay.
Stink's teams basically invented and made famous the zone blocking scheme.
The zone blocking scheme. And Belichick and Mangini and the New England Patriots always struggled with Mike Shanahan in that zone running system. Okay, that was their nemesis. And they always struggled trying to defend it. Well, I'm telling you, put on the Rams. The Rams run exactly what the 90s Broncos run. It's identical, except for the fact that they do it out of three wides. They do it out of nickel far more than the Broncos. We were far more base.
Right.
And so they run all that stuff. Now, they have other things that they run as well, but it's based out of that wide zone, wide stretch, 18-19 handoff, 18-19 force, 18-19 pitch, 18-19 toss. It's all based out of that and all the play action that coincides with that, the naked boot keeps, the play passes, and all those things. They do a great job of running that, and that's always been one thing that historically – the Patriots have struggled to defend. So that part to me is a really interesting matchup between the Rams offense and what they run and what this Patriots defense, you know, has struggled with past history. Now, that's a long time ago, obviously.
No.
But it's still one of those things
and
that
McVay
in your mind.
And McVay came up under Shanahan in Washington before he got this job at 30. And right. So, like, it makes sense that that would be what they're running.
And a lot of times when people talk about the Rams offense, they think they know what the Rams offense is. But ultimately, it's 31 personnel, you know, and it is running that zone. Like, that's what they want to do. As you would say, they want to thunder punch you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they want to do. They do it with a lot of eye candy, camouflage and everything, but that's what they want to do. On the defensive side, too, I think a matchup, and it's coaching philosophy, it's scheme, styles make fights. Wade Phillips and his defenses have been very successful going against Bill Belichick and his offenses. So are they able to put together a game plan that Ndamukong Suh, which I would say these last two football games are as good a games that I have seen him play back-to-back, team defense. That means staying in his gap, controlling two people, rushing the passer, playing an elite level, first, second, and third down. Can they protect those linebackers, because they will have a game plan for Aaron Donald. The strength of the offensive line, the center, and the two guards. Strength of their defense, right there, those defensive tackles. So I think the style for which they're trying to with Sean McVay offensively, it has had success against Belichick and Wade Phillips. Nick, one of your buddies there, he's had success going against Brady and a Belichick coach offense.
Wade Phillips, really interesting, going back to, you know, just kind of his style, is back in his Denver days, You know, people would tell you this about Wade Phillips when you talk to guys around the league. Wade Phillips is going to run what Wade Phillips runs. You're going to be a 90% man. You're going to play man. And you know what? We're going to play cover 11, and we're going to just see how it works out, right? And I'm having dinner with a couple of guys on the coaching staff from the 2015 Denver Broncos team, and they talked about Wade, how he put a game plan together in the AFC Championship game against Brady. Now, Brady came back in the fourth quarter and made it. You know, they were 1-2-point conversion away from tying the thing and all this. But how they never ran the same thing on defense one time. It's like you take everything Wade has ever done and what he has been historically through his career. And in that particular game, it was blitz, then it was coverage, then it was man, then it was then it was zero, then it was, throughout the entirety of the game.
And history would tell you that if you give him people who can rush, and you give him some coverage people.
That's all he's ever wanted. All he's ever wanted is give me two corners that if I need to, I can leave them on an island and give me guys that can get home.
Sure.
The other seven guys on defense, he'll figure out. The safeties, the linebacking, like this is when he was in Houston and he's, you know, he'll tell you he stood on the table for J.J. Watt because when they were going to draft him because he thought, all right, if he can take care of as a 3-4 defensive end my pass rush, much like if Aaron Donald can take care of my pass rush as an interior defensive lineman, the ability it gives him. Another aspect of this game that I do not think should be discounted. We just saw what the Patriots did to Tyreek Hill. Add it to the list of number one options for an opposing offense the Patriots have just eliminated. I think it became most famous when they played the Rams 17 years ago and they said, listen, greatest show on turf, lot you can do. What's not going to happen is Marshall Faulk going to ruin our day. And that started this, or at least started it famously and has kept it going. Todd Gurley, of course, the number one option for the Rams. But their number one A is Brandon Cooks. A player who we just talked about how the Patriots know guys' strengths, know what they can do, know what they can't do. He was with the Pats last year. They have intimate knowledge of what Brandon Cooks is really good at and what you can let Brandon Cooks try to do because he's not great at. Because
I can present the other side of that. Okay. You also got a year of Brandon Cooks running past you in practice. All right, because he's a hell of a is a hell of a talent.
But doesn't
so they also got bad memories of him.
Oh,
it's not like they were just shutting him down.
No. I mean,
there's a reason why he's put together, I think, 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons.
Absolutely, but I think they would rather have the memories of him running past you in practice rather than just have the film of it, of him running past people, because having him in the building, they know him as a player better than any player they have on the Rams.
So what about the intel I have?
Oh, yeah.
As a wide receiver.
Right.
The information that Brandon Cooks has
I just think it's more, maybe you can tell me.
Why?
I'll explain why. Because you have an entire coaching staff that coached a player. Brandon Cooks, I don't think, when he was playing with the New England Patriots, was trying to accumulate all the information possible on the New England Patriots defensive backs.
Absolutely, Nick. But that's the number one thing you do when you're practicing against your team. That's who you're going against. I have a game plan for every guy on our roster, what they do, what they can't do, because the only way I can be successful is by defeating them in practice.
I know who bites on double moves. I know who's great press guy.
I know them better than I know the opposition around the league.
Here's the other thing. Like, I look at, you mentioned Tyreek Hill. So we get a double team on him, right? We got some guy pressing him. We got one safety rolling over the top. No shallow crosses. You can't double team a shallow cross.
Yes.
No, you didn't hand it to him on a jet sweep. You didn't fake a
Couldn't
jet sweep.
Couldn't believe they never handed the ball.
And that's one of the
fake a jet sweep and throw a screen
between
to
him and Cooks is those shallow routes and intermediate routes. And they get the Cooks more.
And I will tell you, Sean McVay, even if they're double teaming him, he'll find a way to get the ball in his hand. Like, the fact that you didn't put it in his hands and give him a chance to run with the ball afterwards, you just said, well, he's getting double-teamed. We've got enough one-on-ones across the board. That part was not coached very well.
I totally agree. And maybe the Rams will learn from that mistake the Chiefs made of not getting the ball in the hands of their most explosive playmaker. I do trust the brain trust of the Patriots and what we've been talking about all year and all morning to know some things Brandon Cooks can't do and to use that against them.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.